Welcome back to Feet First, a podcast focusing on the front of the pack in the UK trail and ultra scene. My name's Ed Scott, and in this episode, great to welcome back Gemma Hillier-Moses to the podcast following her first place finish at the Arc of Attrition 50 miler. Gemma came on the podcast last year after winning the 80k at Chianti Ultra Trail. Since then, a lot has changed for her. She has gone pro, signing with Hoka and Suunto, allowing her to invest a lot more time in her training, as we discuss in this podcast. In this episode, we discuss Gemma's experience going pro, her race at CCC, and also her recent race at the Arc, where she won in 8:11, an hour and 20 minutes ahead of second place. As ever, if you enjoy the show, please do subscribe and leave a rating wherever you're listening. And you can check out more at runfeetfirst.co.uk, or you can head to Instagram at runfeetfirst. And just before we begin, I want to thank Petzl for continuing to support the podcast. Petzl have been at the forefront of hands-free lighting solutions now for over 50 years. Their unique reactive lighting technology, which they developed exclusively, provides the right lighting at the right time for you, sensing, adapting, and responding to your surroundings. The products are trusted by a roster of incredible athletes around the world and across the UK, and they have quite literally lit the way for countless world-class trail running performances. If you want to check out Petzl and their entire range, you can head to the Centurion Ultra Running Store. There'll be a link in the show notes, and you can use the code FEETFIRST10 to get 10% off your next headlamp. That will really support the show and help keep your running nice and well lit through these dark grey months. All right, here is Gemma Hillier-Moses. Since we last caught up after Chianti last year, you've signed with Hoka. You're a Suunto athlete as well. So how has working with those brands changed the way that you're able to approach the sport of ultra trail?
Good question. I don't think a lot has changed in terms of like the day-to-day working of things. So over the summer, I was still... So I was very lucky to sign with Suunto and Hoka post Chianti. I'd already tested out quite a few of the Hoka shoes before Chianti. So it was a brand that I massively believed in their product. And same with Suunto, actually. We had a great relationship from a coaching business with New Levels Coaching that's now Run Through Coach with Suunto already. So I'd already tested and trialed all the product, loved the watch, and same with the Hoka shoes. Like, it was really important to me to go with a brand that I believed in. One, the footwear, because I think that's the number one thing that is so important as a trail runner. It's like the footwear needs to fit, and it needs to feel good, it needs to function really well, but also everybody is different. And I've spent a lot of years with lots of running injuries, and it was important to me to not spend the next 6 months to a year with those injuries. So tested out the Hoka products, and then luckily, became a Hoka athlete just after Chianti. And I guess from a lifestyle point of view, nothing really changed too much, because I continued to full-time work even throughout the summer. But luckily now I did run our own business with Lewis, but luckily now I've been able to let go of some of those roles in marketing and that type of thing, and focus just on coaching, and then focus on my running, which I think I'm a type of person, like, I've built charity, built a business, and I'd like to do all while running, and I like to do a lot. And I think it was the right time in my life to say, actually, let's just try and just do two things, not try and do everything, reduce those stress levels slightly, but have a little bit more time for the running and the training. Because I think with trail running, it gets busier, because you have to drive to different places. I can't just really go out the door and just run. Like, there's a lot of driving and a lot of time spent to and from training. So life looks a little bit different now, which is quite nice.
And how's that been transitioning to have a kind of singular project of yourself as an athlete?
It's been really good, actually. I think it's sometimes things happen in the right time in your life. And I've always ran, and running's always been important to me, but I, from the age of 19, I went in a full-time job with Nike, and I've been working literally until 37 now. And actually this has come at the right time, because I don't feel like concentrating that little bit more on running, I don't feel the pressure, I don't feel that it's changed anything. I feel like I haven't changed anything in training. All I've changed is I still work 3 or 4 days a week, and then at the minute I'm just able to take a nap on a Tuesday after a session instead of going straight to the office. But I think that sometimes there's a maturity to that, and perhaps at different age I would have felt pressure, wouldn't have you know, kept things the same, would have tried to be like doing too much. And so I think it's a nice time for this to happen. And yeah, it's lovely. I just feel like I've got a little bit more time for everything. But I think it also is really important that I've got my coaching, because work is still really important to me. And I was talking to my physio about this. If you go fully full time, sometimes, yes, that's great, because now there's lots of projects athletes can do. But actually, like, we are, you know, susceptible, you do get injured, or you do need time out, or when you recover from races. So it's nice to have something to completely switch my focus on and onto. And I really like helping other people. So everything I've done work wise has been like, you know, founding a charity and running that, and that's helping other people. Coaching is like working with people, and I really enjoy helping other people to their goals. So it's nice to have that balance between my own running, but also coaching others as well.
And Hoka seem like a brand who've kind of gone all in, I guess, on trail and ultra. They're really dominant in that space. Their athlete team is a bit of a who's who. How much are you able to connect with and learn from your fellow Hoka teammates?
So it was quite interesting. One of the big things, so I signed with them up until December and then re-signed for the next 2 years. But the biggest thing that attracted me to signing with Hoka, one was the footwear and the product, and then the other, you know, the team and the culture. But there was also a training camp going on in Chamonix, and I was like, wouldn't that be amazing? Like, I'm still very new to trail running, so what better way to learn from the best in the world? And then we got a rooming list for the trail camp in Saint-Gervais, just, I think, about 3 weeks before, yeah, 3 weeks before UTMB finals. And it was like Hayden, Jim, Jess, Vincent. And so I was like, oh my gosh, okay, like, I am properly being put in there with these guys. And Alison, who has had an amazing career as well, I was sharing a room with her, and it felt a bit daunting, but I took Yorkshire tea and I broke the ice with my Yorkshire tea. So I was like, tried to get everyone into the tea, and they loved it, to be fair. And then everyone was just so lovely. So there was no egos, like, had really good conversations with everybody, and just talking trail running. Everyone was really down to earth and like just what you imagine trail runners to be like. And actually there was a very relaxed vibe within everybody, and it was really nice to experience. And I think it was a great experience. And that was just my chalet. And then obviously I got to know all the other people and some of the girls that I raced against. And it could have been a very daunting experience, because I've done university like training camps and that type of thing, but I haven't done a proper training camp for years. And it was just an amazing experience to see how relaxed people were when they weren't like running, but switched on like when they needed to be. But also there was no real magic formula to be an elite trail runner. And it was just like hard work, training, eat really well, rest and recover, and then enjoy, you know, enjoy what you're doing. And that was a nice vibe to be around. So yeah, it was a great first training camp to be part of. And yeah, made me really look forward to like kind of what's to come this year as well.
I think Hayden's potentially coming to the UK for UTS. So if I get the chance to meet him, Yorkshire tea will be on my list of things to bring.
Take that. Well, the story was as well, like, it was in the evening, and they were like, oh, have you got decaf? And I was like, yeah, I have. And then, you know, when you doubt that the bag is decaf tea, and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't keep all these elite ultra runners awake at night by giving them caffeine to go to sleep. But luckily, yeah, it was decaf, and it went down really well. So
good. Tracking back a little bit, if we're coming off of Chianti, you turned your sights towards CCC. How were you approaching that training block? How did that go?
So that actually looked a little different to what I expected it to look like. So I came off Chianti and I felt like I recovered really well. Like, we had 2 weeks pretty much full recovery. And then I think the second week was like starting easy runs. And then the third week we did a bridging week, and didn't like, after the race was really like muddy, and so I had like a few IT band issues as I was going around, and the stabilizers like probably weren't as strong as they are now, like my muscular side of things, but didn't really feel anything. And then about 4 weeks I went because I was supposed to do UTS in Adonia, so we went up to Snowdon about 4 weeks post-race potentially to just to do a recce. It was the only time we could do it, of like going up Lamberis and then down the pig track. And I was running down the pig track and I could feel something wasn't quite right in my glute. And then after that, I couldn't really walk. So
that's a normal day on the pig track for me. That track is absolutely awful.
It's brutal, isn't it? Yeah. I don't think that caused it, but because it's often like a build-up of things. But I felt like I recovered well, but ended up, yeah, with a glute med tear, which I've never had before. So a lot of these like niggly injury type things I've never had before as a roadrunner. So they are the body like basically taking a bit of different stimulus and then getting used to it and adapting and recovering. So I had this glute med tear, which meant I was actually out for like 6 to 8 weeks fully off running, which was a bit like, oh my God, I've come off like the best race of my life, probably in the fittest position I've ever been to. And then boom, just like, oh gosh. Yeah. So I didn't really know what it was for a couple of weeks. And then so I had 2 weeks pretty much off and then got the diagnosis. And then it was 6 weeks on the bike, which left me with like getting back running like 10 weeks before CCC. And I did like, you know, I did a lot of biking. I hate biking. I'm like not a biker. So I only do it on the turbo because I'm not, I'm competent to ride slowly outside, but I'm not competent to get the fitness from biking outside. And I don't really enjoy it. So like spent a lot of time on the turbo because I couldn't really crush train or I couldn't, I couldn't go on the elliptical, but I could go on the stepper, but like only like once a week because I think the impact was different. So yeah, spent like 6 to 8 weeks doing that, went out to Morzine for our retreat and basically started running the week before that. And then, yeah, started to build back into it, but it had to be a quicker build than we would usually do. So there were a few risks in terms of going straight into mountain running because like, I had CCC in 12 weeks, which was the longest, well, 10 weeks, which was the longest race I've ever done. And 10 weeks before, I still wasn't back running. So you can keep fitness all you want on a bike, but it doesn't, especially the descending, it doesn't condition your legs for that. Definitely not.
And you're coached by your husband, Lewis. I'm curious about that dynamic of being coached by your life partner. Is that something you'd recommend to others?
If you have the same experience as we do, then yes. I mean me and Lewis have like, we have like a mutual understanding of each other, like beyond a relationship, I guess. Like we've always worked in sport together, so we've coached on like kids camps when we were at university together. We've set up businesses together. He's helped massively with the charity. He was like chair of trustee of Move Charity at one point. So we have that dynamic where we actually work really well together from a professional business point of view. And then that kind of stems over to the coaching side of things, because I think like I had Coach Alex Haynes, who was absolutely amazing when I was doing my road running. And then I moved to Lewis when I had quite a few years of injury and I needed the eyes on me like every day to say, actually, don't do this, do this. Like, but we just worked really well. I would say, I mean, he did give me a three-strike rule when I first got coached by him. So three strikes and I was out. I got one strike.
In what sense? Strikes of not doing the workout or something?
Yeah, as in like a bit like mouthy or like not doing the workout. No, definitely not doing the workout because I'll always do the workout. In terms of like, do you know, like just being a bit either answering back or being a bit bolshy.
That's the challenge, I guess, like when you're also like close with the person who's coaching you, is you maybe feel like you can talk back in that way that you wouldn't to a coach who's like a sort of distant.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to work that. Yeah. Because like your chimp naturally comes out when you're in a relationship because it's your safe space and it's when you can be just you and let everything go. But the three strike rule was actually really good. I got one strike for being a bit cheeky at a session once. That was years ago. And then I've never had any strikes since. And it works really well. Like I'm very much an athlete who has a plan and then executes it. And you don't need to motivate me. Like I just get on with it. I don't overanalyze things, so I don't come back and sit for hours with Lewis analyzing sessions. I do my session, like this morning, I've done my session, I haven't even spoke to him, and I'm just like, tick it off you go. So I have quite that relaxed approach, and then Lewis has the kind of data analysis side of things. So when he was an athlete, he would always like ask why he's doing this, why he's doing that, and go into a lot of detail of it. I just want to see the plan, do it. And sometimes I'll question things or like I'll suggest things, but ultimately it's in his hands. And yeah, it works really well. And it's, I think moving into trails, it's been really nice because trail running for me isn't just a sport, it's a full lifestyle change. So we've changed, like our lifestyle's just changed massively in terms of like where we travel, like camper van, camping, all of that type of stuff. And like the fact that we can do it all together, like I couldn't imagine not doing that together. And also it's really nice that when I race, it's as important to Lewis as it is to me, even though as his wife, it would be important, but from like an athlete coaching point of view. Like we massively have trust in each other in terms of what we can do and how I execute a race and then how he plans that race. And then it just works, I guess, for us. So it probably wouldn't work for everybody, but it's a really nice dynamic that works really well for us. And I trust him. Like I say, we've both been on this trail running world together in terms of this journey, in terms of he wasn't coaching trail running before he started coaching me. So it's trust on both sides there as well.
Just a quick break to thank the Centurion Ultra Running Store for supporting Feet First. If you haven't heard of them, guys, Centurion Ultra Running Store are an independent trail and ultra running retailer based right here in the UK. They stock everything from clothing and footwear through to bags, packs, accessories, and nutrition. And they really are the best in the business when it comes to curating a wide range of really incredible running products. You may have heard of the founder, James Elson, a bit of a local legend here in the UK. He and his team, their expertise and their understanding of what trail and ultra runners truly want and need from their kit is what makes the Centurion Ultra Running Store such a great place to shop. They've just taken stock of Innovate's new 2026 season, and they have just partnered with Koros as well. So you can check out all those amazing products at the link in the show notes, centurionultrarunningstore.com. And you can use the code FEETFIRST10 whilst you're there to get 10% off any purchase, including the brand new Koros watches. That's FEETFIRST10 for 10% off. That will help support the show and help keep the spirit of independence alive in trail and ultra running. All right, back to Gemma Hillier-Moses. Sticking with CCC, I read that you went to quite a dark place during that event, but you managed 22nd place, which is a really solid position. So what were the main challenges that you encountered on that event?
I was happy that I got to the finish line, and that should always be the priority, but I was disappointed with how my body handled it. So I actually had a big hip issue. I had it leading into the race and didn't really get it diagnosed properly from any physio, because it was runnable, but it was just aggravating in the last like couple of hours of like a long run, but then it would like ease off and whatnot. And ended up being likelihood it was either a hip strain pre-race and then a hip tear during the race that I got diagnosed when I got back. So that's the main thing that made it really difficult. I was actually fine on any climb. So like I went for a really dark time from Courmayeur down to Trient. I didn't actually think I'd be able to descend down to Trient. Like I was that worried that was going to be my race over. And suddenly I was like, because it's technical, but not too rocky, I was okay. Because a lot of the issues were lifting my hip up and down. And then I actually climbed really strong from Trient to the top of the Valassine climb, because it was less rocky. It's really steep, but it's not really rocky or technical. It's like quite nice underfoot. I wouldn't say nice, actually. It's okay underfoot. Yeah. So I had like bits of the race, even with the hip tear or strain, that were fine. And then anything like fire track or flat road was fine. Anything that was rocky and technical up or down was a lot harder. So that just made it like, I knew I was going to get the finish line because my leg wasn't broken and it was still working in some scenarios. So I thought, you know what, let's just keep moving through this. I'm sure lots of people go through tightness over that distance. But the problem was the issue started in about 5 hours, which is way too early, especially like when I've ran races of 8 hours and not had those problems. So I knew it was kind of a niggle slash injury. I also really struggled with nausea and sickness, which I've never, so my fueling's always been really good during races and training. So I've never had that issue before. And about 6 hours, I started to feel really sick. And I think what we've looked back on is that I was trying to take in 90 grams of carbs per hour, but it was actually really hot. And we didn't adjust for that heat, and you're also at altitude. So we thought, like a lot of my races have been done in like kind of the wet and the cold pre that, because I didn't get a chance to do UTS. So then it was just the Arc and Chianti, and the Arc was short anyway, and then Chianti was wet and cold. So I think some of my long runs were actually done in the wet in Chamonix. So again, it's kind of a little reminder to yourself of actually you do need to adjust things. And we do think that that's probably where the nausea came from. And then that made me struggle a little bit more than it probably should. So I went quite a few hours without fueling. So that without fueling and then the hip issue took me to a very dark place. However, I was just like, the number one priority is to get to the finish line as long as you haven't broken your leg. So I can get there. And actually looking back, you think 22nd place is something to be proud of, to get there in that position with all of those issues that have gone on. But what I do recognize now is nobody really has a smooth 100K. Even people that have gone well, you do talk to them and there are things going wrong. And I think it was actually probably quite good for that to happen to me, because I feel like I've now experienced probably the worst race of my life. And I've had to navigate and go through things. So it's taught me a lot. And I learned that I'm able to deal with those things and reassessed and still get to that finish line. So a big learning curve, kind of happy, but also disappointed and left like wanting a lot more, but understand why the things happened and what happened really.
And I know this wasn't your first time in Chamonix for the UTMB week. Are you someone who leans in to the circus, or do you prefer to go and hide in a chalet somewhere and wait till race day?
So I love the circus, but I definitely hide away. So like I am drawn into the atmosphere. I love like the music. I wish that the kind of all the expo stuff and all that stuff could happen a few days after we've raced.
Yeah.
Because that would be really cool to experience. But it was my first time experience it with a brand. So Suunto invited me to like a breakfast dinner. So I made sure like I did Suunto, did the breakfast meeting with Suunto, and then Hoka did a couple of things. And then that, my bag, my bib pickup, and that was it. Because I get quite tired. I'm quite like, I take in a lot of that emotionally. And then in race week, I can get, if I travel and things, I can get quite tired. So I try to like take myself away and just do those couple of things. Experience them for the first time, because I did OCC in 2024, so I didn't experience any of that. I just did my bib pickup and then went back to the chalet, got ready for the race. So it was nice to experience that and know what is too much and what's enough. But then also some of the priorities to not pick up illness, because I've also heard that a lot from people. So yeah, that was like first defense up the nose, like hand sanitizer, trying to keep your bubble quite small, because at the end of the day, you need to make that start line, and people haven't because they've done too much in that week and come down with an illness. And I was like, you can't train all this much and come down with that. And yeah, but I do love it all. Like I do. Yeah, I really like the buzz and the atmosphere.
It'd be really interesting to see a race like on that scale do the reverse of the convention, which is to have all the expo and everything after the race, where you know, yeah, who's won and you know who's come out on top, and the athletes can almost relax a bit into it.
I think that would be brilliant, because I think that even like watching UTMB, so you watch that and then suddenly everything's over and the Monday everybody, yeah, goes, and you're like, I want to hear the stories. I want to keep experiencing.
And it's basically up to podcasters to kind of find those stories out after the fact.
Yeah, exactly. And like, wouldn't it be cool? I know they do the presentation for the UTMB winners, but yeah, wouldn't it be cool to like just all still be there moving around, doing like things for your brand and just be so relaxed with it, yeah, rather than the few days before. But I can see why they do it, because it's a full week and a festival. But yeah, it would be quite cool to do that opposite way.
Yeah. Let's talk about the arc then. You wrote on Instagram that on paper, you're not suited to this race. I was curious to know like what you meant by that.
So I think what I mean by that is that technicality wise, like I come from a road background, so I know that I still need to improve over technical terrain. And I felt like I'd made a jump coming into this race. So I'd done some tempo sessions and some of my descending segments were getting quicker. I was getting more agile, I was moving quicker. So like accumulation of practice and practice is paying off. However, you add mud and water and bogs into that, I was like, oh, like just getting good at all the dry stuff, and then all of that gets added in, which technically makes that a lot more technical than it would have been. There is like, you know, I've ran races with mud and bogs before, but nothing like the arc. Like Chianti I thought was horrific, but it wasn't anything on the arc. It was just like you have the bogs and the mud, and then you have the rocks coming up underneath it, and you have all the descents that are just like slip and slide. And I guess, but then we've actually looked at my past history of muddy races. So I placed highly in the national cross country when it was Alton Towers years ago, when it was a like mud bath basically, and our club qualified for the European club. So that's a good performance in mud. And then one of my first kind of trail races, which was Mozart, one of the early ones, that was a mud bath, and I ran in like 3 mil lugs and, you know, came second behind Nuria, who was second at the arc 25 this year and yeah, ran well, I guess. And then Chianti and then this. So I'm starting to think on paper it should suit me. But yeah. I guess the other things that I was worried about were single track. So single track running on Coastal Pass, like we don't really have single track stuff here. So I wasn't sure like how my body moves on that or I was confident in the ups and downs and the rolling terrain because I feel like I'm quite a good climber. It was just underfoot conditions and then a bit of the single track stuff. And I guess it's like, it's anyone having that like pre-race doubt, isn't it? Like we all have it. And sometimes, I have it more and then on race day, it just goes somewhere. I don't even care. Like it's mad the difference sometimes between what I think about if I'm easy running on the same path and then I'll be like, worried about it, thinking, well, I'm not going to run very fast on this in a race, and then go to a race and suddenly something changes in me and I'm fine. And yeah, it must just be that switch in mentality that helps. So that's kind of why I say not suited to it on paper, but perhaps I'm getting more suited to it.
Yeah, I know you spoke to last year's winner, Tom Evans, pre-race. Ooh. What was his advice for you?
So I went, Tom's been brilliant, to be fair. Like we live locally with each other. We spent some time with them, Sophie and Tom in Chamonix, and they're both super lovely and very, very helpful. So I actually went to talk to Tom about the mandatory kit because I was on a trail run. I was on my last long run around, we were going to go to the peaks, but it'd been horrific snow and ice and we just weren't going to get the quality. So we did it around our area, like Bradgate and Beacon. And we bumped into Tom and a guy, our friend Jordan, who Lewis coaches as well, on the run. And Tom ran behind me and he's like, what have you got in that pack? Because I was testing out the ARC mandatory kit. And he was like, that looks heavy. So he was like, right, come round for a cup of tea and I'll see what I've got and see if I can help you. And so like even things like that, I mean, my pack was still heavy, but it was like helping out on how do you make things lighter? What can you think about? Which I wasn't really used to. Like last year when I did the 25, I had like things bouncing out the back. They didn't come out, but like it was so big. And similar this year, if I hadn't spoken to Tom and then Chris Jones as well, was really helpful on that. But then the biggest thing Tom said to me was about that 30K section from, I think I've got Pendeen to Lalant. And how this year we had that without an aid station. So it was a very long section and it was probably one of the most technical, boggy underfoot and kind of remote. And I guess conditions for us had changed. Like there was a lot of wind, a lot of crosswind. The conditions underfoot, guy running next to me was like, I did this last year and it was a bit boggy. And this year it's the worst by like a million times more. But Tom said to me that is really slow going. Like he showed me the pace that, I mean, I don't work to pace, but he showed me like his pace that he was going. And he said like, the key to this section is not to get frustrated because it's really easy to get frustrated. But if you come out of it, like basically pissed off, like annoyed, just getting frustrated with yourself, then that's going to have a knock-on effect to the rest of your race. I kind of took that on board and remembered that during the race. And even though like I fell a couple of times, like I didn't feel like I was moving that quickly. Like you'd put your foot down and you go knee deep in a bog or you'd go down and descend. And it's just like, how am I actually going to get down this? It's just a slip and slide and there's rocks everywhere. But actually I came out that section feeling really positive and ready for the next section. And I think that both helped my body. And also then what happened in the second part of the race, which was a really positive second half, even though that was still like muddy and boggy and wet.
You wrote a really awesome post actually about all the kit that helped you. Could you just briefly unpack that for us? Like what were some essentials that saved your race or helped you perform?
So one of them was, I was talking about this yesterday with somebody, was the Nutty Professor sunglasses, which were I'm not sponsored by them, which is a Sun God 42s. So I'd done a run just after Christmas and I was running down a descent and it was windy and cold. And I was like, I can't see anything. Like actually my eyes are really watering here. And I was like, surely this is not good. Do I just need to learn to run and not see? Or do I actually need to be able to see? And then like I actually put it on Instagram and Tom actually messaged me, bless him. I mean, so helpful. And he just said like, you can get the clear lenses for your 42s that you've got. So I was like, okay. And then I was a bit undecided because I put the sunglasses on. I was like, I'm going to look like a right idiot wearing these. Do you know when you've got like that full kit banger type of person?
I actually think it looks so cool, the clear lenses. It's like Blade Runner or something. It's like your like a sci-fi aesthetic. I really like it.
Yeah, well, that's really good to know, actually. But it didn't feel like me. Like, I'm, you know, I love a bit of, well, now Hoka Kit's very, like, blue and black. And but I love a bit of, like, pink and, say, a bit of glam. And then I was having these sunglasses on being like, Lewis is about to disown me. It's like, you can't wear them. It's like, well, I'm wearing them, so we're just going to go with this. So you had to, like, I had to put my kind of thoughts aside in terms of what I look like to put them on. But they were an actual game changer. So, like, especially the second half, I didn't wear them as much because it wasn't as, like, the wind wasn't as bad in the second half. But the first half, like, it was bad, and I was able to, like, I could see the whole way, which was amazing. So my eyes didn't water at all. But they also, like, I think even if your eyes don't water, when you've got that wind and that kind of cold and, like, some of the sea was coming over the top as well, I think your eyes would just take a bit of a battering anyway. So it was quite good how they protected your face and kept your face quite warm and not painful as well. So that was a kind of a go-to for me. And then the other was the Tectons. I wore the Tectons X3, which I looked on the Arc of Attrition group the week before, and people were like, that was not the shoe that people were saying that they would wear. But the shoe was the biggest decision, I think, for everybody. Like, I had lots of conversations with Chris Jones back and forth. He actually decided to... So he was going to wear the Tectons, and then he went for the Mafatis. And I was going to potentially wear the Mafatis and went for the Tectons. So we kind of changed our mind on the evening. And it was only the evening of the race that I decided... the evening before that I decided that the Tectons were going to be what I would wear. And I think that there's no perfect shoe for those conditions. And what I got my head round was that the bogs, there's no grip anyway in a bog. Like, no shoe can give you grip. And Lewis has always taught me that, because he's really good regardless of the grip he has on any terrain. He's like, it's not the shoe. It can be the shoe, but it's not fully the shoe. It's the person who's wearing the shoe and how you use it. So I was like, well, this is the most comfortable shoe that I've worn. I've worn it for the last three races. I've worn it in muddy conditions. Didn't really realise how bad the conditions were going to be. But also, I'd worn it, I'd done a marathon, a trail marathon in December, and that was in the New Forest, and it was completely waterlogged. And nobody was talking about, everyone's talking about the grip, but no one's talking about how the shoe holds the water or, like, gets rid of the water. And the Tectons just don't hold water. So they still, you can go through all this mud and these puddles and they can feel light as anything. They also don't hold mud into the gaps in the lugs because they don't have the closeness of that. So again, you weren't having to, like, do you know when you have to, like, bang your shoe to get rid of everything? They were, like, spot on for all of that. So yes, the mills were like 4 mil lugs, but actually everything else was brilliant. And I got to St. Ives on a road section and felt amazing because they're carbon and they're, you know, you feel fast in them and you can move well in them as well.
Yeah, nice. They look like a really comfy shoe as well with the sock liner. They just look really, yeah, they look really good.
Yeah.
I've got a data point here. So CCC 2025, you ran 13:24. You were 22nd female. 10 minutes behind you in 23rd was Aroa Cio of Spain, who took 23rd female. At the Arc 50, you ran 8:12 for first female. An hour and 20 minutes behind you was Aroa Cio for second female. Aroa is, I've looked into, she's a really strong runner. She's got multiple podiums at Canyon. She's won a ton of races in Spain and Portugal. What's your secret sauce for basically putting over an hour between the two of you at Arc?
Well, first of all, I want to say how amazing she is. I looked at her profile, well, Lewis did before the race, and we were like, she's such a strong athlete. And Katie, who finished third as well.
We she was are, like a minute like, back from Aroa as well. She was really close.
Incredible, yeah. So a real strong field of women. And unfortunately, Phoebe Pascal couldn't run. So Phoebe Pascal was on the start list and she had a bit of a niggle. So she wasn't running. But she was actually there. And I've only just got to know Phoebe. And she was just amazing, like so supportive. And like, you know, women supporting women and just so friendly. Even though she couldn't race, she was like coming up at, like popping up at different places, which was amazing. But Aroa, yeah, I mean, amazing woman. I don't know how, yeah, I'm not really sure how I put that time onto people. I just ran my own race. And I think that's always the most important thing. So even though these amazing women are on the start line, my thoughts are still on my race because it's not a 5K or 10K. Like, you can race the race, but sometimes if you get caught up in a pace that's faster than yours, or also a little bit too slow that you're actually feeling quite good and you know you're pacing, and then where does that lead you? So we've always gone under the kind of basis that we run our own race and whatever happens, happens. And actually, if you're going to fight it out in the second half, not the first half. So the race kind of happens in the last 2 hours if you're going to race it, because even if someone's got a gap on you, that time can be caught if they're slowing down massively. So I guess from a race point of view, I didn't get much intel on where she was, because the trackers were messed up. So there's actually somebody else who commented on my post, actually, bless her. She said she was so embarrassed because she was from another wave, had moved up, got allowed to move up, and then the tracker had messed up and she was first on the tracker for a while. So I didn't have any idea of this, but when I was trying to get some intel from Lewis when I saw him, he was like, yeah, I think they're a little bit behind you, but couldn't really tell me exactly until Lalanne aid station. And actually I was, when I went through that 30K big section, I knew like Ro was Spanish and I knew she'd be good on that technical section. Cause I was thinking, I've watched Zagama a few times when I've been doing some uphill treadmill reps. And I was like, oh, this feels a bit like that. I was like, I'll be ready for Zagama now after doing this. And I was thinking, well, this must be like her forte. But instead of like panicking, I was like, well, if she catches me, she catches me. I know the second half I can be stronger and it is what it is. And then just no one ever caught me. And then I got to Lalant and Lewis had got some information that I had a 30 minute lead. So that was the bag drop where you picked up your extra gels and your nutrition. But again, I don't think it was exactly right that. And then Lewis just said to me at that point, now you need to focus on the guys, like you've got guys to catch now without killing yourself. Like still, you've still got 25 miles to go. But now it's like a race where you can focus on the men. Whereas I wasn't really focusing on the men up until that point, because I think you should, you know, race the race you're in, which is with the men as well. But yeah, you don't need to get too competitive with them until like the last couple of hours, and then can really help to bring you on. So I guess chasing the men probably helped me not to relax too much in that second half as well.
Yeah, keep that fire lit.
Yeah.
Another data point here. I think this is a race that often catches international runners out. I was looking at the podiums and across all the distances, 100, 50, 25, 12, it was 92% of the top three men were British. Two-thirds of the top three women were British. Obviously, it's a British race, so there's going to be more British runners taking part. But we did see a lot of international runners showing up. And I'm just curious about your thoughts of how much of an advantage you think it is to have trained in the British winter and have dealt with the conditions that you dealt with out there on the Arc before. Do you think that helped you anyway, psychologically or physically?
Definitely. And I always say we channel our inner Josh Wade when we're in these conditions. Yeah. Because he was rubbing his hands when it started to snow at UTMB this year. And Josh has that. I don't know why we're really impressed with Josh and he's just amazing. And sometimes when these conditions, like, so actually Josh's name in my head comes up a lot in terms of, so I was training in Lady Bower. I think it was just before Christmas and I had like a 3 hour run and it literally like chucked it down for the whole run. There was trees down on some of the descents I was running. It was like a mud and a bog. And like I was wet through, like my leggings were just soaked. And do you know when you're just cold and it's wet? And I was just like, I want to be good in these conditions. Like I want to be like Josh Wade. I'm going to channel my inner Josh Wade and be happy and embrace these conditions. And I think because we get such bad weather, it probably means that we don't necessarily enjoy it, but you just get a lot used to the conditions. And I mean, this winter has been terrible in terms of rain. Like, you're running on muddy trails. And 2 weeks before the Arc, a lot of our trails around here were really muddy. So I guess it was just, I put myself on those trails on purpose. And like, we've got some like woodland behind us, which is really flat. Like there's just a couple of ups and downs. And I do some of my shakeout runs around there. And I made sure that I went on like a few of the single track trails and just did like laps and like was testing out how my shoe, like how to use the inside a little bit more going down some of the muddy descents and like, okay, if it's a purely mud going upwards, like how do I get grip? And so I guess without really realizing, I was playing around with certain things and I came back from one of the runs with Antelou, and I said to him, oh, I just love that run, because I was just practicing and I was playing around in the mud. And yeah, it just felt like it was less of a run and more of a like skill-based practice where you're having fun. And so maybe that was part of the build-up in terms of my mentality was already there with the mud before the race, because I think some people actually struggled with the conditions because I think they may have not embraced it as much or potentially, you know, wanted better conditions. And part of me was like, when I heard the rain coming down the night before the race, I was just like, right, this is an adventure now. Let's go have it. Let's go have some fun and see, you know, see what happens and see how good you can be on them. And if you fail, you fail. But if you get through it and you love it, then great.
Yeah, nice. I love that technicality piece. I don't know if you read Killian's article recently about future of trail running, but he had a section on the need for a grading system for technicality. And I think it would be interesting to see where the art came on that, because as you say, it's technical anyway, but then when you add water and mud into that, it really complicates things.
Absolutely. And I need to read that article actually. But I don't think the UTMB's points really account for that. They account for the conditions above, but you can't count for like some of that on the ground. I mean, some of it you were running over being like, what the hell is going on here? And like, yeah, when descents have no, just like pure mud with no out of it, like there's no like grass or hard bits on the side. Like one of them in the second half, I was still pulling thorns out of my hands like a week later. And I spoke to Naomi and Robbie in the 25, and Robbie had gone into the thorn bush, the same one, because basically it was just a slip and slide all the way down, and then to the side was just the thorn bushes, and you could get a bit on the side. But then that's not normal in a trail race, is it? Usually you just go down the path. And I think by that point as well, like I'd taken quite a few, not risks, but I'd taken a few tumbles in that 30K section. And I think I was towards the end of the race and I was like, I don't really want too many risks now. Like you do, you know, you've got a big lead and you're like, I don't want to just go and fall head first into this gate or into this rock if I don't have to. So yeah, I think that makes you a little bit more cautious on some of those later on. But yeah. I mean, next year, just everyone just practice on a mudslide and see if they can figure out the technique. But I don't think there is a technique. I think it's just slide and see what happens. And most people fall and
yeah, oh well. It's well known, isn't it? It's a race of attrition. It's just about how long you can tough it out, really. There's a part of me that's kind of hopeful that UTS is similarly rough. We've had a couple of really nice years for UTS, really nice, sunny, hot conditions where, you know, international trail runners have been able to do really well. But I think if we got a rainy year, it would be a different story.
Yeah, because it's not, because we did a recce for the UTS 25 in April, I think it was last year or the year before, and because I was supposed to do it, but I had a bit of an ankle injury, and we did it when it had rained, and the bogs towards that second half. I mean, you tend to be all right on the climb and the main first bit of the descent, and then it's that second bit where it's just all boggy. Yeah, they've had good weather, haven't they, the last few years? So it'd be interesting to see what happens this year.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the rest of the year for you. I know you've got a relatively quick turnaround to Chianti at the end of March. What's drawing you back to that race?
So I think Chianti, when we had a discussion, pretty early on around it being, well, after CCC, that Chianti would probably be the race that I would step up to 120K. I loved it last year. I loved it because obviously I had a good race as well. But I love the region. Like, I really like the wine. I'm not a big wine drinker, but I love the Chianti wine.
Yeah, when in Chianti, I think you've got to, don't you?
Exactly. And we made the mistake last year of not bringing suitcases to fill up the wine. So my poor dad, was like, Mum and Dad love wine. And they, we got wine as like part of the, when you get your bib. So they gave you a bottle of wine, and then the Airbnb we stayed in, they left a bottle of wine and we had to leave it. And I think my prize was like this massive bottle of wine, and I left it with the Outra team because we couldn't drink it because it was huge. So this year we're bringing an extra suitcase to take it back.
a wine suitcase, love it.
Yeah. But I think, I think that's why we're going back. It's close enough for us. It's a good race. It had good competition. It is a golden ticket race for Western States. And now I'm not, you know, I don't have my eyes on Western States this year, but I do. Lewis always tries to get me to race races where the competition's going to be high, because I think that's really important. You need to see where you are against like the world's best. So We don't shy away from that and want to do that. So hopefully the field will be really good this year again, as it was last year. And yeah, it is an 8-week period from the Arc to Chianti, so that can seem quite short. But the Arc wasn't an A race for me. Like, as much as it came out like that, there was still, like, we did still taper into it, but maybe not as much as, say, I would have done for like a CCC or an AGOT race. But also, like, somebody asked me when they were like, are you ready for the taper? Because often, like, when you get to taper period, like, you're ready for that taper. And I was like, oh, no, actually, I'm not. I'm feeling quite fresh. I'm feeling like still really motivated, not too tired at all. So I was absorbing the training really well. So it was kind of like nice to go into a race like that and then come out of it with a week of full recovery and then a week of running building and then feeling in quite a good place, ready to go into back to normal training next week, hopefully.
Last year, you ran the Arc 25, obviously. You ran Chianti and you ran CCC. This year, you've run the Arc, you're heading back to Chianti, and presumably you're targeting UTMB as well this year. So is it fair to say you're a creature of habit when it comes to racing?
Oh, good question. I haven't thought of it like that, but it looks like that. I think I actually didn't want to do the Arc 50. So Lewis said, I think you should do it. And I was like, I'm not going back again. Even though I did enjoy the 25, I don't know why I said, because I was thinking like 50 miles, like we got lucky last year with the 25 in terms of the weather. And they got lucky again this year with the 25, because last year it was in between the two storms and we had like 12 degrees sunny and it was wet underfoot. But, and then this year the 25 also got, yeah, blue skies. But what the reason we did the Arc was because it's an early chance to book your spot for 2027. So a lot of athletes leave it till last minute and are trying to find in, like, you know, September, October, November, trying to get their UTMB final spot for the year after. So Lewis is very good at long-term planning and planning things in. So we probably had the year planned pretty much in September last year for this year. The other thing is getting into races. Even as an elite athlete, they ask you to try and do your entry before things sell out. So I guess the Arc and Chianti are creatures of habit. And then CCC is because obviously that's a UTMB World Finals. I have got two potential options, though, to do a shorter race in between Chianti and CCC. That's just still being decided, and there's some external factors to what that race will be. So there will be one thrown in there that I haven't done before, which will be nice. But yeah, definitely going back to do CCC, have a crack at that. And Chianti, I guess we've done part of the course, so that would make sense to then extend it in the same race that you know a little bit more about, and you've got a familiar setup to, and you know the area, so that you can kind of control a few more things than maybe when you first go to a race.
And am I right that you're kind of strategically upping distances with ambitions to conquer 100 miler sometime? Is that on the radar?
Definitely, yeah. I think for me, I just I'm quite like chilled with it in terms of like, oh, well, why not? Like, I like being outdoors. And the reason I went to CCC from OCC and haven't stuck with OCC was I just wanted to do more training hours outside. Like, I don't want to sit by a laptop. I want to run and I want to... be out in nature. But what you realize is it doesn't change that much from 50k to 100k, and Francesco Pubbi spoke about this in a podcast. It's not a drastic shift in terms of the hours of training, the like long run length. It's sometimes just the hours of training and things in between, but I would like to do Western States definitely in the next 2 years. It's just logistically how that works, but and how expensive it can be to go over. But luckily we've actually got a friend who we used to train with, who actually lives not far from the course. So that's a good thing, because you've got to recruit people to throw ice over you. I've heard, for that race. I know you've done it. So yeah, you'll know how much extra help and support is also needed. But UTMB is definitely on my list to do. So I've done 60 miles of the course of CCC. I want to go recce the 40 miles I haven't done. I might do that this summer just to go check it out and see what it's like and just run on some different trails. But that's definitely, in my sights. It's just, I guess we'll plan probably the second or this half of the year like through the summer what that next step will be. And I'm not sure whether it would be a UTMB or Western States, or I might stick at 100K for a little bit longer, get that experience, get that durability, and kind of like, yeah, get the muscles used to the demands of the longer races, and then see what's next.
It's funny, it reminds me last year when Fee Pascal got the golden ticket at Chianti and said she wasn't going to take it, and then there, lo and behold, she was there. Who knows what's on the cards? You never know.
Yeah, very true. I think it'd be a big ask this year. Yeah, from a lifestyle and work point of view as well. But we'll see. Yeah, I think there needs to be a stepping stone for me. Like Fee did a lot of longer races. I don't think I'm quite ready to run my best over 100 miles just yet. Yeah. But yeah, hopefully in the next couple of years.
Nice. Well, Gemma, really good to catch up and really exciting to see, you know, your continued growth in the sport. I've got one more question, which is, I think it'll be interesting to get your answer on this because there's so many things you did right, but what's the most important thing you think you did right at this race, i.e. the arc?
For me, the most important things hands down was my attitude towards the race and my mindset, 100%. One, in terms of like seeing it as an adventure, and yes, it's a race, but also going into it, trying not to worry about all the elements and things you can't control, like focus on what you can't control. And then the second thing was actually to look after yourself. Like, I feel like there was, yeah, people who maybe didn't get the nutrition right over that longer period of time, who maybe didn't account for being out for longer. And I think that those sorts of things I'm learning are really important. And yeah, looking after yourself in those sorts of conditions in those races are really important. You saw that in UTMB this year. So I think watching and learning from other people is really important. So I took on a lot of like what was said around UTMB in terms of when conditions changed. And then I know it wasn't as bad as that. We didn't get like snow and ice and things, but the theory still come across to it. So so mindset was probably the number one thing. It's how I read somebody's post. They said like, attitude towards it and a good waterproof. mindset and then looking after yourself throughout the race.
Nice one. Well, good to catch up. Thanks, Gemma.
Thanks very much for having me on.